This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, it's now 7:35 a.m. on Thursday, the 19th of May. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Melissa Idris, Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. Ibrahim, what do we have coming up in terms of the biggest business news today?
We got the AG report, calling out on a few ministries that have performed below par. We got Petronas and also the scandal at Suzuki.
Excellent. Okay, well, let's kick it off with Japan's GDP, which was announced yesterday. Now, the world's third largest economy surprised markets yesterday by reporting its fastest pace of quarterly growth in a year. Now, that's a big rebound from the contraction in the final quarter of last year. So Japan has essentially avoided another technical recession.
Yeah, so this technical recession, as defined by the two consecutive quarters of negative growth, actually surprised some analysts, but they did grow at a modest pace at about 1.7%. And I think this may indicate that Abenomics is working in some areas.
Do you agree, Joel?
Well, it's one quarter of results, whereas Abenomics intends to achieve something that is longer term, for example, to restore inflation. Who would have thought that we would come to this, right? We want to restore inflation into our economies. Japan, of course, has gone through two decades. They call it the lost decades of inflation. So there is a problem right now. There is very strong yen and inflation is still very low. The jury is still out whether Abenomics is working.
You know, one thing I want to look at is the China slowdown and whether or not it has effect on Japan. And I think the faster than expected pace of growth may suggest that the Japanese economy is managing to shake off the effects of a slowdown in China. And while the yen is strengthening, the fact that the renminbi or the yuan is also having volatility, that may help in this whole shake off with the Chinese slowdown.
Well, if you look at the breakdown of the GDP growth, and according to this report, which is by, Wall Street Journal, is it by the
Financial Times, actually?
By the Financial Times. The numbers don't tally up, but it's kind of a positive growth. You have 1 percentage point coming from consumption, private consumption, so which is good. You want more people to spend, and that somewhat explains that decoupling from China, right? You have your own people spending on behalf of the economy. You have government consumption also adding 0.6 percentage points to that growth. But trade is where China is involved. People like China, the United States are involved, and that added about 0.8 percentage points of growth. You add them all together, it's about 2.4%, whereas the economy grew about 1.7%.
Right? Where's the missing number?
The math,
doesn't add up. But I'd also like to point out that in this article, it does say that Japan's initial GDP data is notoriously unreliable, and that revisions often change the picture substantially. In fact, analysts are warning that perhaps the strong figures in the first quarter may not be able to be replicated in the second quarter.
Yeah, because there are some incidentals that happened within the quarter that has surprised everyone in terms of helping the growth. For instance, disaster following the earthquake. Japan has made a supplementary budget to help reconstruct the country following the recent earthquake in Kyushu. It's a southern island in Japan. They are also planning a further stimulus of several trillion yen or several billion US dollars. So these kind of investments in infrastructure does help the growth in essence.
Yeah, just recall that Japan is the third largest economy in the world. I think that's 7 billion bucks. It's a tiny drop in the entire GDP ocean that goes into the trillions of dollars. The other thing about it is the yen, right? The yen has moved over the last 5 years because of Abenomics, substantially weakened. It was about 80 to the US dollar back in 2012. It went to as low as 120, just above 120 to the US dollar. And right now it has strengthened back and moving towards back to the 110, 100 yen level to the US dollar. And this is quite worrying for the proponents of Abenomics.
Well, since we're talking about Japan, now the president of Mitsubishi Motors has announced that he will step down. If you remember, there was that huge scandal about fuel economy. So he's saying, okay, he will resign from his position. But the funny thing is, now the scandal has actually moved on to its rival, Suzuki Motors. So Suzuki is Japan's fourth largest car maker, and now it's come under fresh regulatory scrutiny after an internal probe had found that its testing methods had not complied with domestic standards since 2010. So here's Osamu Suzuki, the 86-year-old CEO of Suzuki, making a public apology at the press conference yesterday.
We deeply apologize for not abiding by existing regulations when carrying out tests. However, we have been able to determine that our company's fuel efficiency results have no problems, and we have also notified the Ministry of Transport about our findings.
That was Osamu Suzuki, the CEO of the motor car maker, the auto car maker, and he's really apologizing that the company has not complied with fuel emission standards since 2010. I think now, are we going to be seeing this contagion effect from one car maker to the other?
Yeah, definitely. I think not just car makers. I think it's just Japan Inc. in general. But based on my conversation with Honeywell on the Breakfast Grill a few weeks back, he says that these kind of scandals is not nationalistic in nature. It's not about Japan. It's not about Germany and VW. It's not about 1MDB and us, right? It's about just corporate governance in general and the fact that people are chasing profits too much. Maybe this has forced corporates to actually fudge the numbers to make that shareholders meet their demand. Wrongfully done so, but this is exactly what's happening right now.
So my question is, how do you protest this flouting of the rules? I guess we are more and more concerned about the environment. Do we have alternatives? Can we take public transportation? Can we cycle? Do we delay our consumption or use of purchases of cars?
You know how some companies are actually angry about this? For instance, Norway's sovereign fund, they are planning to sue Volkswagen for that scandal emission. I mean, if you think about that, I think that sends a really strong signal to other car makers who perhaps are flouting the rules. You've got the weight of $850 billion of the Norwegian oil fund coming at you in the court of law to say, you lied to us, yeah. Now you pay. You pay for that.
Now, and is this setting a precedence for other private equity firms and other investment firms, right? BlackRock is in everywhere. Does it mean that BlackRock will now take action against companies that flout the rules? Or what happens to the other PE firms as well? I think this is a very interesting time to live in, particularly when corporate governance is a big issue.
A big part of BlackRock's operations are ETFs, right? They are very big ETFs, manufacturers, if I can call it that. And one criticism against the ETFs is that they're very passive investors, so they don't take an activist position. And also they have very small stakes, many small stakes in a whole large companies, whole host of companies. For example, if you look at a typical passive index link fund, they hold more than 750 stocks, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't have a big stake in one particular company. I guess that's the same position with Norway as well, but Norway is taking that extra step to sue. So
in Germany, I might add. Okay, so it's 7:44 right now. We'll be back with more business news in just a minute. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.